And Dozier, it's a line drive left field, deep and gone. Hunter Dozier in a hurry. It's his third home run of the year. That ball is crushed to right field, and that is gone. It is a three-home run game for the Royals. And 4-0 in the bottom of the fifth. Center field. Smith is back to the track. It is gone. And Dozier and Soler have homered in back-to-back games.
Well, that was the good news yesterday as the Royals hit three homers. You heard every one of them. Hunter Dozier with a blast. Alberto Mondesi with a blast. Soler with a blast. And welcome to the Sports Ticket, where we still have a few tickets available on our Royals bus trip. Please, would you go with us? I mean, it's a great ballpark, beautiful ballpark, and they're bound to start winning some games. And plus, you can have a great fun time on the bus and go with us. I got a few seats open.
I'm like, I don't want to rag. $5 million man, Mike Trout.
That's
too,
right. So. You can see, don't worry about coming to watch the Royals. Watch Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, for crying out loud, on April 28th. I don't want to rag on the Royals too bad because we do. You got a few seats available, just a few, for our Royals bus trip on April the 28th. But, you know, if you could eliminate the bullpen, the Royals would be in good shape. But the bullpen is such a big part of baseball now, where at least a third of every game, if not, you know, 44 to 55%, like the other night, Jacob Junis threw 94 pitches in four innings, and that was it. The bullpen had to throw the last five innings. That's never a good recipe for anybody, let alone the Royals bullpen.
Yeah, and then you guy gets his first start and goes three innings the night after that. So
that not good. Not good. So Dozier with a homer, Mondesi a homer, Soler with a two-run homer. And so it's interesting. I got to share my experience, and then we'll get to the bad stuff here. So a friend of mine, we went to the Royals game yesterday, played hooky from work. We both kind of just wanted a break, and it was like, hey, you know, we can go to an afternoon Royals game. That'll be fun. So we got there, and we walked in to where we were going to sit, and all of a sudden I turned, and Jason was talking to somebody. I was like, well, who's Jason? What? We just walked in. There's hardly anybody here. Who's he talking to? I looked, and it was Brent and Terry Cunningham from Cunningham Telephone and Cable. They were in a suite because
That's why he was out of the office.
That's
yesterday.
Right. I know.
Get that automatic reply.
Because I almost texted to see if he wanted to go to the Royals game because him, me, and Terry, Brent, Terry, and I have gone to a World Series game before together, which was a blast, great memories, and back in 2014. And so I thought about texting him, but I saw an out-of-office situation earlier this week. I'm like, oh, okay, so they're out of the office. Little did I know, they're in Kansas City, and they're in the Royals. They're going to Royals game. So we were talking with them. Brett Winkle was there, too. So I was like, wow, must be a rough day, you know, tough day at the office, huh? So we were joking about that. So we saw all of them. And then Jason and I, we went, because he had never been to Kauffman Stadium. And so we went ahead and perused the stadium, but we kind of went one step at a time. And since it was a Thursday afternoon game, and the Royals had lost 9 in a row up to that point, and it was a 12:15 start, which is very rare. Usually it's 1:15 starts, and the school isn't out. You knew there wouldn't be a lot of people there, and there weren't. So we go to the Blue Moon Tap Room, and we go up high and get a view there, and you could have sat there if we wanted to. And then the guy said we could go down the Pepsi porch and we could take pictures. The Pepsi porch, if you don't know what that is, it's just one row of chairs or bar stools that's right next to the outfield wall, but in front of the fountains. So when the wind blows a little bit, the fountain, you can get a mist of the water when the fountains are going onto you. And so we sat there for two or three innings, nice and warm in the sun, and we're right behind Whit Merrifield. So we were able to see Whit because he was in right field. So that was perfect. Then after a couple innings, we're like, well, let's just keep moving on. We can sit wherever we want because the ushers aren't going to be tough today. So we went to the left field side, and we sat in a front row, and we were right over the Mariners bullpen, just like we were over the Royals bullpen earlier, and we were behind Alex Gordon. So we sat there for a couple of innings. Then we went and got something, grabbed a pretzel or whatever. Then we went over to the third base side, and there was seats in the front row. So we sat over right there on third base for the most part. And then there was a base hit triple right down the line right near us. Like, okay, great. And then we looked and saw a home run hit that was just off a little ways where we were at the Pepsi porch. Yeah. Like, oh, maybe we could add a ball. So then we were like, well, let's just go ahead and make this complete. So we decided, and I think it was the bottom of the seventh or top of the eighth, I think, we went and sat down right behind the Diamond Club. So we were as close as we possibly could, because you ain't jumping into the Diamond Club. You got to jump over a rail, and this ain't going to happen. So we were like 6 or 7 rows behind home plate, just in time for Boxburger, to come into the ball game for the Royals. And I was telling my friend, I'm like, listen, I know the Royals well, and it was 4-0. And he goes, hey, you're in pretty good shape. I said, that's not enough. That's not enough. We need more. And it was 4-2. I'm like, this is not good. 4-3. Then got 2 insurance runs, 6-3. I'm like, yeah, that helps. And then Boxburger comes in. And it was so funny because there are these older guys that were behind us. And they were probably 65 to 75 years of age, roughly, maybe 60 to 75. And it was so funny just listening to them. Man, these guys, it's kind of like Major League. Have you seen the movie Major League? And you got the guys, man, these guys stink. These guys are bleepy, you know, and I'm trying to clean it up.
Yeah.
And so these guys behind us are like, man, these guys, where do we get these guys? And he's like, oh, we got them off the scumbag bargain heap during the summer, like spring, whatever. And like, well, Bob, what is it? Is our best players in Omaha? We don't have any players in Omaha, Jerry. And they're just going back and forth. And then all of a sudden, you know, Soler comes to the plate one inning, and the guy behind me is like, come on, George. I'm like, his name is not George. I turned to Jason. I started laughing. Like, his name is not. He's from Cuba. There's no Georges in Cuba, man. It's Jorge. J-O-R-G-E is how it's pronounced.
The English translation of that name is George,
yes.
But that's not how you say
it. That's not how you say it. It's Jorge. I'm like, well, what's next? Jesus is coming to the plate? No, that's Jesus. I'm like, my goodness. So we were just laughing, having a great time. And so Whit Merrifield, he gets out in the, I think it was the 8th inning. And I told Jason, I said, you know, the Royals will probably blow it. He'll get another chance to extend his hitting streak. And what do you know? The Royals blow it. How did they blow it, you may ask? Well, the bullpen's just not good. Although Loveladies look good when he's come up. I like them to bring Zimmer back up and just, you know, take it on the chin. I'd rather the Royals go with young guys and get some experience than going down in flames with guys that are apparently past their prime, like Willie Peralta and especially Brad Boxberger. So anyway, the Boxberger, you knew it wasn't going to be 1-2-3 inning. He was facing the bottom of the order, but that wasn't, you know, safe. And to make a long story short, there were runners at first and third. It was 6-4, and the Mariners were down to their final strike. The guy that hit the home run on Saturday night off of Boxberger to win the game in the top of the ninth was at the plate. And Boxberger, let me tell you something. When you sit behind home plate, you get a real good feel how hard guys throw. Boxberger doesn't throw very hard.
Yeah.
His fastball is 89, 90, 91, which is hard. You know, that's great speed for some people, but at the major league level, it's not good.
Not for a guy that's supposed to be a closer.
No. And his best pitch is a changeup. And so the more pitches Haniger, the batter, saw, I was like, this is not going to end well. And so eventually, after a battle at the plate, 2 strikes, Royals are 1 strike away. Everybody's standing, applauding. You know, that's what you do at Decay when the Royals are about ready to win. Even though I was like, I don't know if that's going to work. Hits a deep fly ball to center field. And they didn't even announce that Terrence Score had been replaced by Billy Hamilton as a defensive replacement, which is ironic because you come in to be a defensive replacement because you're good at defense. And here's what happened.
Hamilton drifting back. He is at the track, and he does not make the catch. Narvaez scores. Here comes D. He scores. Mitch Haniger slides into third base, and he has tied this game in the ninth. He gets to Boxberger for the second straight game. Not good news there for Billy Hamilton and the Royals.
They had just put him in the game for his defense. Had a lot of carry to it. He crashed into the wall. It looked as if he had it for a second. And when he hit the wall, maybe it popped out. But here it is, a drive by Haniger. Another changeup down and away from him. Hamilton also fighting the sun. That was just right off the top of his glove.
Yeah, the wall didn't cause him to drop it. The sun might have been a factor. And the Mariners, they had dropped one. Their left fielder dropped one right in his glove earlier in the game. And then there was a pop-up because it was really windy yesterday. The wind and then the sun. It wasn't easy. But it was a play Billy Hamilton should have made. Then he was hurt. Luckily, it's a mild knee sprain. He's day-to-day. He'll be all right. But they put in a defensive replacement that we didn't even hear announced at the ballpark. So we all thought it was Terrence Gore. And then we found out, I checked on Twitter real quick on my phone, I said it was Billy Hamilton, because then the Royals burned their DH, because then Witt went from right to center, and Soler went from DH to right field. So, anyway, the Royals still had a chance, right? You know, bottom of the ninth, they have a chance. 1-2-3, it didn't
matter.
Sure they do. Yeah, top. So the top of the 10th, we bring in Glenn Sparkman. to provide us with a spark. Oh, he provided a spark, all right.
Sparkman into the wind, and the 3-2 pitch. Swung on and driven deep to right center field. This baby's a laser shot. It's gone! Daniel Vogelbeck has given the Mariners a 7-6, 10th inning lead here in Kansas City.
But we at least still had Whit Merrifield's hitting streak. I mean, we still have that to hold on to as a Royals fan. That's about it. So Whit gets to come to the plate with two outs, and he is the final guy, you know? And the only way we're going to win this game is a two-run homer. There's no way we're going to, you know, we keep going one run, tie it, go up. Yeah. We got to win it on a walk-off two-run homer. Whit comes to the plate, 31-game hitting streak. Of course, he extended that on a bunt single, of all things, a driving a tying run on Saturday night. So he broke George Brett's record. 31-game hitting streak. He was 0 for 5, comes to the plate, final out of the game, right? And he strikes out on high cheese, and so there was, well, a 4-0 lead, a 6-3-0 lead. They lose their 10th in a row, and on top of it, Whit Merrifield strikes out to end the game and snaps his 31-game hitting streak.
Not a good day at the office.
No, no, but it beats a day at work, so I'm not going to complain at all.
I was talking about the Royals. It wasn't a good day at the office. That I'm there. I'm going to enjoy at least part of it.
Oh, we enjoyed it in regards to moving around the seats, the views, and everything else. But I kind of was expecting the Royals to lose. I wasn't expecting a center fielder to drop the ball in the final out. But, hey, why not surprise me? Yeah, I will get my money's worth. So Ned talks about the loss. I mean, you talk about a punch to the gut.
It hurts. It's not fun. Losing that game right there was not a fun. It's not a fun way to lose a game. I mean, we're gonna have to find ways to continue to battle and try to battle our way through it. I mean, we gotta keep battling our way through it.
Yeah, he can keep saying all he wants. That's just he, and he's right. I mean, that's all you can do. You know, Soler's hitting the ball pretty well. Back-to-back games with home runs. Dozier back-to-back games, home runs. Dozier had three hits yesterday. Mondesi a homer. Gordon was 2 for 4 with a couple of doubles. Now, Chris Owings, I have no idea why he's playing. I have no idea why Chris Owings is playing. He can't hit the ball. He's nothing special defensively at second. I don't know why the Royals don't just keep Witt at second all the time. Put Soler in right. And you can have another bat, Hamilton in center, Gordon in left, and you know, if you want to use, I don't get it really. I don't understand why Lucas Duda's on this roster. I don't understand why Chris Owings is playing second base most of the time. I don't get that part. Ryan O'Hearn did not look good at the plate yesterday. He struck out 3 times. He looked lost. He had that great September, but you know, now we're talking. There aren't those call-ups you're going up against pitchers. And so he doesn't look very good. Frank Schwindel was sent down. They brought up Jake Newberry. The Royals are, you know, kind of doing musical chairs in the bullpen, just trying to find an answer. And I think Richard Lovelady can certainly be an answer in the bullpen. And I think Danny Duffy gets healthy. I think the Royals should put Duffy in the pen.
Oh, yeah.
And try to help this bullpen because it needs something. It is so awful. It is by far the worst bullpen in baseball. And then Terrence Gore, after going 3 for 4 on Saturday night, like, oh, hey, we'll reward him. We'll put him in the lineup again. And yesterday, 0 for 4 and struck out 3 times. And there was one swing he had that looked like a swing I've seen in peewee baseball, where the ball already went by, and then he kind of half swung. Like,
yeah.
Did you not see the ball? It's pretty sad. So, anyway, good news is there's 150 games to go.
150 of these still to go.
Bad news is there's 150 of these games.
2-150 is that?
Yeah, 2-1. Well, they were on a. They were on pace.
I mean,
they were on pace to go 162-0.
Yeah.
Man, that's changed. Started 2-0. That seems like March. Oh, that was March.
Yeah.
When they were 2-0, they haven't won a game in April. Man, oh man. Then so I was asked, what's the longest losing streak in baseball history? I think 26 in the MLB. 21. Remember, Baltimore started in '88. They started 0-21. Now, you think 2-10 is bad? 0-21. Like, your season's completely over, which some people could say.
You can't recover from that.
No, but some people could say, well, it's already over because the Royals are 2-10. Well, technically it's not over. You can rally from that. But you know what's crazy is you look at the standings right now early in the season, and trust me, it's early, but you can dig yourself a deep hole. It's hard to get out of it. And right now, some teams that you think were going to be World Series contenders are off to really bad starts. You know, Yankees have some injuries. They're 5-7. Tampa Bay's off to a 10-3 start. How about Boston, defending World Series champions? They won yesterday, but they are 4-9. Then we know the Royals are 2-10. The Indians and Tigers are atop the Central. Seattle 13-2 helps when they're playing the Royals every time. They get the four-game sweep yesterday. The National League, the Cubs are 4-8. Colorado, after making the playoffs last year, 3-10. So you've got some teams that you would expect to be better than they are, really, off the bad starts. And you got some teams you didn't expect. San Diego, Eric Hosmer in the Padres, Manny Machado, they're 9-5. They lead the NL West. You got the Mets at 8-4, which is a bit of a surprise to some. The Mariners' best record in baseball. You know, Detroit's off to an 8-5 start and swept the Royals. So, you know, it's early, and there are teams that aren't much better than the Royals that are supposedly a lot better. Boston, the Cubs, as I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And the Rockies, but I think you get the long-term picture. Safe to say, I'll bet on the Rockies, the Red Sox, and the Cubs have better records end of the year than the Royals.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought this bullpen would actually be decent. It is so horrible. Why didn't Jake Diekman pitch yesterday? Jake Diekman didn't pitch yesterday. I don't think he pitched the last two games. Why wasn't he an option yesterday?
I don't
know what Ned did.
Actually, I think he did come in for an inning on Wednesday night.
On Wednesday night?
Yeah.
Okay. I said, I'm thinking weekend because, yeah, okay. It was Wednesday night when the Whit Merrifield broke the record. Yeah. I've been thinking when I take a day off from work, Highland will make fun of me on this one. Then you kind of get messed up on your days. But, yes, it was Wednesday night when Whit and the Royals lost 6-5 in the home run. And then yesterday, Boxberger gave up the triple, I guess you call it, for Haniger after Hamilton couldn't catch it, which to me was an error. But, hey, whatever. Give the guy a nice fat triple.
Yeah, Ned was trying to explain why he went back to Boxberger yesterday, and I'm like, apparently I was sitting here like, that's all you had, and then I think he mentioned Diekman.
He had more confidence in Boxberger than Diekman, which, by the way, neither one's good right now.
No.
But, you know, I don't know.
Not after what happened the night before, I'm not going to Boxberger.
No,
that's mean,
I wouldn't have either.
I don't know.
I don't get it either. But anyway, Kennedy, we don't want to wear him out, even though he hasn't given us $70 million worth of pitching. He's in the final year. We're protecting him. Why? Well, Ned says, well, we got to get him better acclimated to his role, so we didn't want to do that. 35 pitches on Wednesday night. I'm like, you need a win, dude. You need a win in the worst way. I'll take Ian Kennedy in that situation over Brad Boxberger and probably Willie Peralta. I'll live with Ian Kennedy. And he at least throws 95. Now, Peralta can throw hard, too. And I'm just sitting there like, why are we saving Ian Kennedy? We're worried about Ian Kennedy's arm here early in the year. And I know that sounds bad because, you know, they're human. But he's in his final year. He's not part of a long-term deal. And if you're worried about acclimating him and not pitching back-to-back days in the bullpen, then how do you put him in as your closer 3 days into the season when he's never been a closer? You didn't exactly ease him into that transition, did you?
No.
So the logic is, was there such a term as contradictory logic? Because that's what it seems to be. Anyway, Royals are 2-10, off to a bad start after starting year 2-0. And I saw this the other day. The Royals have the most 9-game losing streaks in Major League Baseball history. And it's not even close. Like, I think Baltimore's second. Something Curtis Seabolt put out there from 810 WHB in Kansas City, which, you know, some stats are fun and unique and some are just depressing. And that's one of them. Remember the Royals had, what, 20-game losing streak with Buddy Bell? Something like that? I remember Buddy Bell became the manager of the Royals. The Royals weren't any good. And they swept the Yankees in his first three games at Kauffman Stadium. It's like, wow, Buddy Bell, why didn't we change sooner? And then later on that year, I believe the Royals lost 20 in a row.
Yeah.
It's really
did not end well.
It did not end well. No, not at all. So, anyway, let's move on to something a little bit more positive, like local sports. Dusty.
I don't want to say it's not positive, but there's just not a lot of it going on.
The weather.
The weather.
We have a junior high track meet today in Minneapolis, which I am so excited to attend.
Oh, I bet so.
Oh, man, I am super stoked.
So junior high must be what's going on today because the high school softball and everything yesterday got postponed, so we didn't have anything there. High school golf, Smith Center, is at Sacred Heart today. That was supposed to be yesterday, but they moved it to today.
I hope the wind's at their back when they're hitting the golf ball.
No kidding. 3:00 this afternoon is when that starts in Solana. That's our only immediate area thing that's actually going on today. It's kind of how the schedule fell this week. So if you're interested in that, that's going on this afternoon. Full schedules for everybody can be found at ncksports.com. And we have our Athlete of the Week, Afton Conway from Osborne, and much more results from earlier this week. All the local stuff you need to know about is at ncksports.com.
All right, right now winds out of the northwest at 22 miles per hour. Could gust up as high as 40 or more here today. So not a great day to go to a track meet. Not a great day to be playing golf. It's a great day to stay inside.
Yeah.
Right now, 35 degrees with the 20-mile-an-hour wind probably feels about like 22. I thought spring was here.
Summer came for like a day.
Yeah, I know. One day. And then you go from 80 to 40 in 24 hours, less than 24 hours. It's crazy. All right. Speaking of golf, the Masters is underway. And the great thing, the greatest thing that happened to the Masters, if you had the big-name players that are all right there come Sunday in the final round. And Tiger off to a good start. Phil Mickelson off to a good start. Brooks Koepka off to a great start. Here's Tiger Woods on his round yesterday.
I've only shot, I think, under 71 times, but I've shot, 70, the four times that I have won here. So we still got a long way to go. I mean, tee off late tomorrow and wind's supposed to be up. So I got my work cut out for me the rest of the week, and so does everyone else.
Bryce DeChambeau is 6-under. Brooks Koepka is 6-under. It seems like Koepka just gets fired up for the majors. That's the tournaments he wins. Mickelson is 5-under. Dustin Johnson's 4-under. And Harding, I don't know his first name, he's 3-under. Adam Scott's 3-under. John Rahm is 3-under. And we mentioned Tiger there. He's 2-under. He's certainly in the hunt. Topeka's Gary Woodland is 2-under as well. And these guys, they just started the second round for some golfers. And the leaders are going to tee off. DeChambeau is going to tee off here in about 10 minutes. And then Mickelson's going to tee off in about 20. So the Masters, $11 million purse. The Masters, a tradition like none other, continues in Augusta, Georgia. And you got some very familiar names at the top of the leaderboard, which makes it, I think, more interesting and more entertaining. Don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's great when you know who the heck the guys are there, the leaders. It's never good. Who's this guy?
I'm not a golf guy, so I really don't know DeChambeau. Mm-hmm. But the other guys,
he's won a few tournaments.
Those other three that are
he's a young
tied for first in 3-4, I definitely know those names for sure.
He's a young and up-and-comer.
Mickelson and Johnson.
Koepka is just, sometimes he's a machine.
It's like you said, he gets up for the majors. Those are the good ones to get up for. Those are the purses that you're going to win that are going to be nice.
And that's how you remember it is when you win the majors.
Yeah.
No question. Doesn't he have 3 majors already?
He got 2, I think, because he won 2 in a row.
Yeah, I was thinking
he had
3,
though.
And
he was the first one that did that in a long time.
I was thinking he had 1 before, and then he got 2 back-to-back. I was thinking, let me see if I can find that out just for fun. Major wins. I was thinking he had 3, but maybe he does just have 2. Brooks Koepka became world number 1. How many majors has he won? He's won 3.
Okay.
He won 3. So, yeah, 3 majors. Not bad. 4 wins on tour, 3 majors. Yeah, those are the right ones to win. Right ones to win. Not bad. Tiger, of course, stuck on 14. All right, the NBA playoffs. May I tell you what? Dusty is a Spurs fan. I'm a Thunder fan, and I don't think Dusty and I could be more happier.
Well, let's talk about yesterday, man.
You got the right match.
Everything that worked out for those two teams.
I didn't even know the Blazers and Thunder was a possibility, and I was like, wow, awesome. I'll take it.
Yeah.
And the great thing about the Spurs and the Thunder is they stay opposite side of the Warriors as well. So, you know, the thing I think about with the playoffs and the matchups is that nobody is giving Denver any credit whatsoever. The Nuggets are just being totally overlooked, and they'll have a major chip on their shoulder. And so everybody, I think a lot of people are just going like, the Spurs are going to knock off. They're going to knock off the Nuggets. And I don't know, you see this a lot of times where there's a team that's heavily favored in a series or all the experts and national people jump on it. And then what happens is the opposite, that Denver will go out and win in 5 games. And I could see that happening. I mean, the Spurs are good. Don't get me wrong. But Denver's really good, too. And people don't understand that, I don't think. The Spurs have more playoff experience than everything else. But they got Jokic, and he is a stud for the Nuggets. And, you know, the Spurs don't have a stud. You know, Aldridge is a nice player. DeRozan's a nice player, but they don't have Tim Duncan in his prime. They don't have Tony Parker in his prime. But they're a good, solid team. They're always well-coached. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens in the series. So here's the schedule for Saturday, tomorrow. The NBA playoff starts, and the playoffs last 4.5 months, it seems, because they have all these off days. Brooklyn Nets are the 6th seed. They'll be at Philadelphia tomorrow at 1:30 on ESPN. Sixers are the 3 seed. Joel Embiid may not play in game 1 of that series because he always seems to be banged up. The Magic will take on the Raptors in a series that I think won't last very long. That'll be at 4 o'clock on ESPN. The Raptors, the 2 seed. The Magic, the 7. The Clippers are the 8 seed, and they draw the 2-time defending champion Golden State Warriors.
That's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night on ABC primetime. And then the Spurs and the Nuggets open their series late out in Denver at 9:30 tomorrow on ESPN. And all those series game ones tomorrow. Then Sunday, the Pacers and the Celtics. I think it's going to be a great series. Celtics, the 4 seed, hosting the 5 seed Pacers. That's in Boston. Noon on Sunday on TNT. Then it'll be Oklahoma City at Portland. Everybody's picking the Thunder to win the series. And Portland's the 3 seed. And the Thunder the 6. But the Thunder beat Portland all 4 of the matchups this year. The Thunder match up with Portland. 2:30 tip-off on ABC. And then the Pistons against the Bucks, which that'll be a quick series, I would imagine. That's at 6 o'clock tomorrow, or excuse me, on Sunday. These games on Sunday, by the way. Thunder on Sunday. Pistons against the Bucks. The Bucks are the number 1 seed. The only team in the NBA to win 60 games.
Yeah.
And just barely. 60-22. And then the team that I think really got a bad situation here were the Rockets. The Rockets got to play the Jazz, which not going to be easy. Game 1 is Sunday night at 8:30 on TNT. And if they get by the Jazz, they're going to take on the Warriors in the semifinals instead of the Western Conference Finals. And once LeBron and the Lakers self-imploded, I was like, it's going to be Rockets-Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. That'll be a great rematch. And then on the very last day of the regular season, the Rockets fall to a 4 seed. And now they got to play the Warriors in the second round. And that means that the Thunder, the Spurs, or the Nuggets, of course, they're the Trailblazers too, but, you know, your Spurs and my Thunder could face Golden State, it wouldn't be till the Western Conference Finals, which is the perfect scenario.
Oh, listen, I was watching this like pretty much the last 10 or 15 days of the season just to see where the Spurs were going to end up. And I didn't think they'd get up all the way to 6. They still had a chance to do that. But I said I want to play Denver because they match up well with Denver the way they play.
Yeah, and Thunder match up with Portland.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I felt good about that and wanted to play Denver. You obviously wanted to stay away from the 8 because you knew that Denver wasn't going to – I think everybody knew Denver wasn't going to overtake Golden State in the end and be the 1 seed.
Right.
They were in the 1 spot a lot of the year for many nights during the season. But, you know, I just kind of felt Golden State was going to overtake it. So you didn't want to have the 8, no matter who you were, whether you're the Thunder, the Spurs, whoever, didn't want to be in that 8 spot. And then the Clippers kind of fell apart a little bit down the stretch and went down to that 8 spot. So, yeah, the matchups are great. If you're, like I said yesterday, if you're a Spurs or a Thunder fan, you're loving everything that played out the way it did. And because I think you've got two teams there that, despite being the lower seeds, have a lot more experience in these tougher situations.
Right.
Guys that have been there before and are both, I think, pretty well coached.
The other day, Portland, the final game of the season, they're down, I think, 28 to the Kings, and they weren't even playing their starters.
Yeah.
It was like they were tanking, so they didn't have to play the Thunder. And they came back and won with those backups and beat the Kings and thus get the Thunder. So sometimes you try to tank and you still can't tank.
Yeah.
Of course, the way
we all thought the Thunder, by beating the Rockets, were going to guarantee themselves a matchup
with
Houston.
Rockets, yeah.
And then,
yeah, I'm glad that's not the first-round series.
Oh,
that's too good of a first-round series. So we'll see how it plays out. By the way, the Royals back in action today at 7:15. Brad Keller, their ace on the hill against Carrasco. Cleveland Indians come to town. The Royals are certainly due. They're really, really due. And then Homer Bailey on the hill tomorrow on Saturday, and then Sunday, Junis back on the hill against Corey Kluber. So the Indians starting to play some good baseball. That's great for the Royals as they come into Kauffman Stadium for a 3-game set. All right, if you're into hockey, which I don't know how many people are around here, the National Hockey League has a thing called the playoffs as well. And let's update you on that. The Blue Jackets. I want to see where I pick this up at because I haven't been following it very closely. I'm not a big hockey fan, although my middle son loves hockey. Right now, St. Louis leads their series over Winnipeg 1-0. Dallas Stars lead over the Predators 1-0. Toronto has a 1-game-none lead over the Bruins. San Jose has a 1-game lead over the Nashville Golden Knights. The Capitals, defending champs, with a 4-2 win yesterday. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes. They're up 1-0. And the Avalanche is a team I kind of follow a little bit in hockey. They were shut out by the Calgary Flames yesterday in the first game of their series, 4-0. Blue Jackets, Lightning, game 2 today. Penguins, Islanders, game 2. Blues and Jets, game 2. And Golden Knights, Sharks, game 2, all today. And then the Avalanche being back in action against the Flames in Calgary tomorrow night at, it says here, 9:30. So that's your hockey update in regards to the playoffs. All right. For some people that aren't big baseball fans, and now that basketball season's over, at least from a college perspective, and some people aren't NBA fans or not NHL fans, all they have left, spring football. Spring football, which honestly seems to be a little bit more tepid than it used to be. There are more and more schools that are kind of going away from full-fledged spring football games. We're seeing that, and it's obviously happening with Kansas and Kansas State, and we've seen other institutions do it. Oklahoma moved their spring game stuff up to today because of weather. It's supposed to be 35 and windy and cold and maybe rainy in Norman tomorrow, so they moved it up to tonight, which might not be ideal for some people who want to get to it, but makes sense. And so they're moving theirs, but KU and K-State are not. It's not going to be as bad tomorrow in Lawrence or Manhattan as it's expected to be in Norman, so it makes sense to stick with what they got. So KU, Les Miles, first year's head football coach, first look at the Jayhawks in a public forum, and they will kick everything off with all kinds of activities beginning at 3 p.m., all stuff for the kiddos. Gates open at 4, and the spring game begins at 6. And then Rick Ross, who apparently is a great rapper, he, because you know me and rap, we go hand in hand, man. Like oil and vinegar. Rick Ross is the, you know, after 2 Chainz, now you got Rick Ross. I'm telling you, they get Eminem there, and I'm there. But, or Vanilla Ice or MC Hammer. Or all three would be great. I'd pay at least a few bucks
for that. I don't think MC Hammer is going to move the needle with some of these younger kids when you only got 2 songs.
Are you saying
it'll
just be a whole bunch of people in their 40s like me that are going to be there? All right, so. You know, find your demographic
Vanilla
and go
Ice,
for it.
Eh?
Vanilla Ice would be, yeah.
Come
yeah,
Eminem for my one
help.
Song.
Eminem would help. Eminem would help in the 20s or 30s, maybe.
Oh,
like
Eminem.
20s.
Eminem would be,
that would
yeah,
help.
It
that would help.
It would go move the needle for everybody.
But that's maybe next year. Rick Ross, who I don't know any of his music, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I know Rick Ross, but I don't listen to him.
I know Rick Ross, but he's not a
I don't
rapper.
Even know if I knew 2 Chainz.
Yeah. I heard a 1 Chainz and 3 Chainz, but yeah. I never heard 2 Chainz. No. He's a middle kid. Rick Ross, I know somebody named Rick Ross, but he's not a rapper. So anyway, Rick Ross is performing after the spring game in Lawrence, if you want to check that out, and you can tell me how great he is. And K-State's having their spring football showcase. So it's not a spring football game. They'll have things going on from 11:30 to 1:30. They've got, well, you got to have a beer garden, of course. Fun Zone, Willie's Fun Zone, stuff for the kiddos, inflatable games. There's photo booths, pop a shot, face painting, giveaways, prizes. And then, of course, there will be some football drills on the field. And then they'll do, like, what are they going to do? 1 o'clock, they're going to do maybe 30 minutes.
I think the drills start at 1 o'clock.
Drills at 1 o'clock.
And then after that, there's a 30-minute scrimmage.
30-minute scrimmage. So, you know.
They say coach's going to be mic'd up, and you'll be able to hear him through the.
Which I've always wondered, when coaches get mic'd up, do they at some point forget and just drop
Yeah, I know. It'll be
you
interesting
know what?
To see You know,
I would be nervous about that. Like, there better be a delay on that thing if I'm a coach and I put a mic on like that. So that'll be interesting. First look at the new Wildcats with new coaching staff. How much you take out of it, I don't know. It's like we talked with Riley Gates earlier this week on he's from GoPowerCat.com, and we talked with Riley about, you know, this is great, all the access that you get now with Coach Klieman, and everybody is excited about all of that. But at the same time, you ask yourself, okay, this is great and dandy, but you're going to have to win. You're going to have to win games.
And they just lost one of their best linebackers yesterday the day before that to a season-ending injury,
Justin Hughes.
So,
yeah, that is a big loss. They're, no question.
That's not good.
So besides looking for, you know, it's funny, we asked Riley what he's looking for the K-State game. He did not say the beer garden. That would have been my answer. But anyway, Riley, we asked him earlier this week. He is brought to you by Heineken Electric and also Hanson Auction Realty every Tuesday from GoPowerCat, GoPowerCat.com. We asked Riley, what are you looking for at the spring showcase?
Yeah, well, the one that I've been pounding on the most this whole transition period is the running backs, obviously losing 3 guys that were playing and having to bring in a grad transfer and a transfer from Louisville and Harry Trotter. I mean, I think that you've got some pretty big shoes to fill here. If you're James Gilbert and Harry Trotter. So looking at how the running backs stack up, you know, who gets carries when, things like that, I'm looking to see how much they want to throw in some different formations, too. Yesterday I noticed they run a jet sweep-like package, which was really interesting. It's not something you've seen a lot of at K-State, so I think that they have some new offensive formations they're going to throw in there. And keep an eye on, because I don't think the staff is one that's going to hide it. You know, Bill Snyder would go out there and he wouldn't really show what he's going to do. And I'm not saying they're going to reveal the entire playbook, But I do think they're going to be a little bit more open because I think they feel pretty confident in what they have, you know. And who cares if you know what we're going to do? We're still going to beat you with it. But the biggest thing that I'm really looking forward to seeing is who lines up in which defensive backfield positions. We're facing a really interesting thing here where Scotty Hazleton likes to pull his nickel backs and put him more of on a linebacker role, which is something we haven't seen at K-State. And frankly, the nickel backs at K-State are small. Walter Neal is, I'm not kidding, shorter than me and weighs less than me. And he's playing nickelback and linebacker and absorbing hits from big guys. And I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to be in that position. They've got guys going to nickel that you would think are safeties. They've got safeties going to cornerback. So they've really got a lot of different shifts and movements in this defensive backfield. And I'm really excited to see who's where officially and what we might be able to expect out of the defensive backfield.
You notice Riley didn't say he's more athletic than that player. So it's pretty interesting. Riley will give us a full report on the spring showcase coming up Tuesday here on the Sports Ticket from Go PowerCat, GoPowerCat.com. Now, Nebraska is going to have a spring game. They no showcase. It is a spring game. Coach Frost says we owe it to the fans to have a spring game. It'll be the red-white spring game taking place at Memorial Stadium on Saturday. A kickoff is set for 1 o'clock, and it'll be carried live on the radio, but also televised live to a national audience on the Big Ten Network. So the spring game for Nebraska, you can watch it on the Big Ten Network coming up tomorrow, the red-white spring game for the Huskers, who should be much improved from last year and certainly on the right path to success, in my opinion. And Frost is, you know, he was the right hire, and I think Fred Hoiberg's doing great things at Nebraska. If you're a Nebraska Cornhusker fan out here listening to the show right now, you should be very excited about the future of your football and men's basketball program. And then, you know, volleyball is always great. Not that that's somebody that they don't think about volleyball right away. A lot of people do, but volleyball, of course, is right there in the Final Four almost every year, competing for national championships. Men's basketball now, I think, can win a few games NCAA tournament. Fred Hoiberg, you got Scott Frost, who I think is going to get you back towards the top, if not the top of the Big Ten, at least here and there, which means you would then be in the hunt for a national championship if you're contending for a Big Ten title. I mean, I like everything that Nebraska has done in regards to their coaching hires the last few years. They identified who they want, and they said, we're going to go get them. Yeah. Unlike UCLA, well, we're going to give you a pay cut, John Calipari, but we'd still like you to come over and coach for us at UCLA, which, by the way, they've signed Mick Cronin to a 6-year, $24 million deal, $4 million a year, when they'd offered $8 million to Calipari. So what they're saying is, we just picked up a guy that's half as good as Calipari, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Really? So Nebraska knew how to handle these coaching searches, if you want to call them coaching searches. They knew Scott Frost is who they wanted.
Yeah, that wasn't much of a search in football.
No.
And basketball, doesn't sound like it was much of a search either, but it was, does the guy want to come or not?
I don't think originally Nebraska had Fred Hoiberg. Like, he probably was on their list, but once they got leaked out and Fred Hoiberg made it clear he'd be interested, then all of a sudden it's like, well, this is a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah.
He's the best available guy out there. I'm surprised Fred Hoiberg. I've had some people tell me, is that the best Fred Hoiberg could do is Nebraska? I'm like, well, there are other openings out there. I mean, you think he could do better than that because he was really good at Iowa State.
Yeah.
And by the way, here's another coaching situation. Frank Martin's at South Carolina. We mentioned Mick Cronin left Cincinnati after 9 years to go to UCLA to be the new head coach there. Frank Martin's name's popping up in the search for the new head coach at Cincinnati. Do you see Frank Martin going from the SEC, the AAC, going from South Carolina to Cincy? I do. I mean,
Cincy,
Bob Huggins.
Cincy definitely got a better history.
Yes, they do. And Bob Huggins was there.
You're not handicapped in the AAC if you have a really good season, like in basketball. It's not like this is football.
Yeah, three teams that made it
so
this year, I think.
You're not like UCF and AAC in football, where even if you have this undefeated year, you're not going to be able to get the prize. Mm-hmm. I think the money's right. And
I can see
you can improve your situation. That's not the same type of deal as college football. So I could definitely see him moving from South Carolina to Cincinnati.
I could too. And he can talk to Bob Huggins about all kinds of stuff.
And Dana Holgorsen went from West Virginia to Houston in football. So Frank can definitely go from South Carolina to Cincy.
I agree, but it's not a Power Five conference.
Yeah.
You think about it, and this is what Buzz Williams has said a few times, and Buzz Williams went to A&M for Virginia Tech, and before he was at Virginia Tech, he was at Marquette, and he had success at Marquette. Virginia Tech is not a great job in basketball, and he took them to the Sweet 16 and was an eyelash away from taking Duke in overtime and maybe getting past the Sweet 16. But Buzz Williams has said this to people in the media before. He's like, once you take a team as far as you think you can take them, or, you know, you create even more expectations, that's the time to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. And if you think about Frank Martin, he should have left right after he took South Carolina Final Four, because that's when he is more marketable than all. But nobody leaves a team after they take them to the Final Four.
Yeah.
The only guy I could think of is Roy Williams, and that was a weird situation because they lost in the championship game, but Dean Smith really wanted him to come to Carolina, and that was him going back home. But you can't think of any other. I mean, Chris Beard wasn't going to leave Texas Tech for anywhere after just going to a national championship game. You don't see guys that make the Final Four that are going to suddenly just jump somewhere else.
You're going to stick around for at least a year after that and see if you can.
But don't you think South Carolina Gamecock men's basketball, the ceiling is the Final Four?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So he's already reached the ceiling. So what is there left for him to accomplish South Carolina other than he doesn't meet the expectations he created?
Yeah.
So now you go to Cincinnati, which they can't get out of the first round of the tournament, and he goes to Cincinnati and they go to the Elite Eight or Sweet 16. He may, you know, jump ship again because that's about as good as we can do at Cincinnati. And you think about it, it makes sense. And that's what Buzz Williams has done. Marquette, I've done as much as I can. Time to move. I go to Virginia Tech. Would you take a whole bunch of NCAA tournaments appearances under Buzz Williams before he was hired and make a run at the Sweet 16? Oh, we'd take that in a heartbeat. Now that you get him there that many times and get to the Sweet 16, now suddenly, well, we should be better than a Sweet 16 team. Mm-hmm. Well, boom, we jump ship, get even more money, go home to Texas, and I'm at Texas A&M, who hasn't done anything recently. And I take them to Sweet 16 Elite Eight. Maybe somebody else is going to come knocking on my door. By the way, UCLA hired Mick Cronin, as we said. Steve Alford, who was at UCLA, is now the head coach at Nevada. Where did Eric Musselman go? He went from Nevada to where? Where did Musselman go?
I don't even remember.
Because he had a great year with Nevada, although they kind of... Oh, he went to Arkansas. So he went to Arkansas. So you have the musical chairs in regards... And then Doc Sadler just abruptly stepped down at Southern Miss.
Yeah.
So now Southern Miss has a coaching opening. So... And sometimes you don't think that affects anything. Like when you may be listening right now and going, why did you mention a former Nebraska head coach that left his job with Southern Miss? Why would you bring this up on the show? That has nothing to do with this region. Wade, why would you bring it up? Because there's the trickle-down effect of coaching. We saw
John Beilein's leaving West Virginia to go to Michigan.
Yes.
That opened up Bob Huggins one year later.
Great, and Bob was never expecting that.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely positive that's a great example. Another great example, all you got to do is look at Kansas and Kansas State. They had defensive coordinators hired and ready to go, and all of a sudden one coach quit or was fired in the NFL, and all of a sudden things trickle down. Or another college, in the case of the defensive, or his offensive coordinator, what was his name? Lindsay. I think Chip Lindsay was his name at KU. He was offensive coordinator for like a week.
Yeah.
And K-State had a guy that was NFL experienced, defensive coordinator lined up, and then all of a sudden somebody was fired or let go, and next thing you know, you have a coaching opening, and it just trickled down. Four people go here, there, whatever, move around, and it affects K-State and KU. So you can't sit here and say, well, Doc Sadler has no effect on us. Who knows? Maybe there's a KU assistant or a K-State assistant. Probably not. But let's just say maybe. Or Creighton, Nebraska, or Oklahoma, that suddenly this guy's like, oh, that's a really good assistant. We like him, but he's going to go be the head coach at Southern Miss. You don't know how this all plays out. Or a guy from, I don't know, what's an example? Somebody from Murray State goes to be the head coach at Southern Miss. Now Murray State opens up. And this guy from Toledo, and it just trickles down. It's amazing. We've seen this with broadcasters.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it happened with Haney and all these people that we know with Texas Tech's play-by-play job and other guys down all the way to NAIA schools.
Yeah.
So it happens a lot in sports, not only in sports but also broadcasting too, where one opening pops up and it's just a trickle-down effect that affects 10 different jobs.
Yeah.
Doc Sadler leaving Southern Miss may seem like nothing. Could end up roundabout way affecting an institution in the Big 12, and we don't know it yet.
Yeah, it's you don't know until it all plays out.
That's right. So it's kind of interesting. All right, that'll wrap it up for the sports ticket today. Enjoy the spring games, and if you want to go on a Royals bus trip, we got a few seats left, and I can't promise you they're going to win on April 28th, but what I can promise you is we'll have a great time going to the game, coming back. It's a great place to go to the game. Beautiful ballpark, one of the best in all of Major League Baseball. So we'll have a great time. If you've never been to the K, We get there plenty early so you can peruse, go around, check out the Royals Hall of Fame. There's tons of stuff for the kiddos. We want to make it a family affair. It's very family-friendly on the bus. You don't have to worry about that. We have trivia, giveaway prizes, and we have a blast. We have snacks on the bus. We have water and pop on the bus. So if you like to go, we've got a few seats still available. You can still sign up at our various locations across North Central Kansas. We'll pick up those boxes early next week. And if you want to make sure you got a seat, give us a call, 545-3220. Have a great weekend, everyone.